Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Kama Daf Mem. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 11 lines from the top of Daf Mem. We open with a Tanaic source. The first point that the source makes concerns an apotropus, a court-appointed executor who will take charge of financial matters of a cotton, of yesoimim, miners, or cheresh possibly, shoite, points that we discussed in our previous shiur. The source begins, Tona Rabbanan, apotropesim mishalmin min ha'aliyah, v'ein mishalmin kofer. Apotropesim will pay from the assets owned by the miner, but a kofer payment will not be made. A kofer payment, which is the focus of the Gemara as it continues, the issue of paying min ha'aliyah was alluded to in our previous discussion, so we're not going to focus on that. But rather, the issue of paying kofer is a situation where an animal kills a human being. If an animal, a shor hamuad, kills a person, so the Torah mentions that a payment is made to the family of the victim, and that payment is called kofer. The brisa that we just read says that apotropesim, executors that are caring for the property of minors, in the event that their ox kills a person, so they will not pay that kofer payment. Man tana kufra kapora. Who is the tana that holds that the kofer payment is a form of atonement? As opposed to classifying kofer as a straightforward monetary payment, monetary compensation, there is another school of thought that says it is kapora. It serves as a form of atonement, of expiation. So the Gemara is asking, who is the Tana that holds thusly? And the Gemara answers right after the bracketed section, the line, is the first suggested answer, and you'll see that's Rav Chisda. Why do we have brackets? So on the side we have a little note that says Tama Sograyim. The reason for the Sograyim for these brackets is the Gemara right now is searching for who is the author of it. That which you see in the brackets, that yesoimim, they're minors, they don't need expiation. They, as minors, they're not considered having wronged, having sinned through their animal killing someone. So since they are, in fact, minors, there's no need for the payment of the kofer payment, and hence the executor who's in charge of their estate, their matters, the kofer payment won't be made. So now let's read the Gemara again. Man tana kufra kapora. Who is the tana that says kofer is a form of atonement? V'yasmi lav v'nei kapora ninu. This, we said, is a given. We're not looking for who holds this. That's why it's in brackets. But we're pointing out, by the way, that yesoimim don't require kapora. So as a result of that, we understand the source that says that apotropism will not pay the kofar payment. Oh, so who holds that kofar is a form of kapara as opposed to monetary restitution? Omar Rav Chisda, Rabbi Shmuel ben Yishu Rabbi Yochanan Broka Hi. We already encountered our first triangle. On the side of the Gemara, under our Mivneh structural note, it says, Tshuvos LaShelo, these are answers to the question, Man Tana de Kufra Kapora? Who is the Tana that holds that the Kofar payment is Kapora? It goes without saying that if the Kofar payment was viewed as a straightforward Mamon payment, then the Apotropos would see to it that the Kofar payment is made. But since we're viewing the kofar payment according to this school of thought as kapara, that's reason for exemption. Well, who holds that kofar is kapara? Rav Chisda tells us it is Rabbi Shmuel, the son of Rabbi Yochanan Broka. The Sanya, we have a Tanaic source which quotes a pasuk, and the pasuk deals with the case of an animal that killed a person. The Pasuk is in Shmos Perech Chafala Pasuk Lamed. And let's just glance at the side for a moment. You see, we've quoted this Pasuk. It says there, and we're reading from the margin, Im Kofar Yushas Olav, V'nosan Pidyon Nafsho, K'chol Asher Yushas Olav. The Gemara, V'nosan Pidyon Nafsho, Demei Nizak. The Tanakama says that the Kofar payment is an amount that reflects the value of the one that was killed, that was damaged, that was killed. Rabbi Shmuel ben Yishu Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka Omer Demei Mazik. The value, the cost, or the price of the aggressor, the person who owns the murderous animal. My lav behol komifgi. Is it not so that the following is the point of disagreement between these two Tanoim? The Tanakamu said Demei Nizik, and Rabbi Shmuel says Demei Mazik. The Rabbonan Savri, the first opinion, holds Kufra Momonahu. The Kofar payment is a straightforward financial restitution. You look at the value of the person that was killed, and his value, the amount that constitutes his value, will be paid to the family, the heirs. That's mamon. That's what we mamon, financial restitution. For Bishmuel, he said that the payment is in terms of the value of the mazik, the aggressor. So Rabbi Shmuel ben Yishu Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, sovar kufra kapora. You as the aggressor, as the owner of the murderous animal, you need atonement. Your animal killed someone. So it seems that his opinion is the opinion that kufra is kapara, is a form of atonement. So, and this is the basis of what Rav Chisda said when we asked who is the Tana that holds kufra is kapara. It would be Rabbi Shmuel, who says that the payment made is in accordance with the value of the aggressor, the owner of the murderous animal. Homer Rav Papa lo. Rav Papa disagrees. Rather, the kule alma kufra kapara who? Not only Rabbi Shmuel will say that that the kofar payment is kapara, the Tanakama agrees that the money that's paid serves as atonement for the owner of the murderous animal. So if they agree, what do they disagree about? The diamond, as you probably guessed if you didn't look at the side of our Gemara already, these are diamonds focus on what is the point of komiflegi, of disagreement. So we continue with Rav Papa's approach. Rabbonon Savri B'dinizik Shaiminon. In terms of calculating how much need to be paid, so the Tanakama, the Rabbonon hold, it's calculated in terms of the Nizak, the one killed. Rabbi Shmuel ben Yishu Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka Sovar B'demazik Shaiminon. Calculation is made in terms of the value of the owner of the murderous animal. I think it's worth pointing out that Rav Papa's approach, as opposed to Rav Chisda, enables us to say that the source above, that with which we opened our shir, in which it said, Ein Mishalman Kofar, according to Rav Papa, is something that is agreed upon by not just Rabbi Yishmael ben Broka, but The Rabbanon as well would agree with that. My taimo de Rabbanon. Why do the Rabbanon say that this, that the kofar payment is evaluated in terms of the nizak, the value of the one killed? Answer. The answer is essentially a gzeira shava. A word comparison, a similar word appears in two psukim. Namra shisa lamata. The word shisa, or the word yushas. The pasuk says, by a muad, animal that kills. We read the pasuk before, in kofar yushas. The word yushas means to place upon someone an obligation to pay. So the word shisa is, we'll say, the infinitive form of the word yushas. So you see that the Torah says shisa lamata in the pasuk of im kofar yushas, and v'nemra shisa lamala in the pasuk that deals with an animal that causes, I should say, in the event that a woman is, a pregnant woman is damaged, and and as a result of that, she loses the child. It's a miscarriage results. That is called demei vlados, the value of the children, the fetus that was killed. And there, the pasuk says, "Kasher yushas olav baal ha'isha." And we conclude, "Ma lahalon b'dinizik." Just like in the case of vlados, it's clearly a payment for the value of the one damaged, the victim. Afkan b'dinizik. So too, in the case of a muad that kills, where the kofar payment is imposed, it's in terms of the victim, the nizak. Rabbi Yishmael, b'noi Rabbi Yochanan b'roka savar. Rabbi Yishmael holds, he disagrees. He holds that it's, the payment is in terms of the value of the mazik. It says in the pasuk, v'nosan pidyoin nafsho, k'siv. And he shall pay the redemption of his soul. Who's redeeming himself? Obviously, the mazik, he's the one that needs redemption. V'rabonon, their response is, in pidyo nafsho k'siv, it's clear that the money payment is a form of atonement, of redemption. Miu, however, kishai minon, however, when we evaluate how much needs to be paid, but denizak shaminon, the evaluation is in terms of the value of the victim. We continue with a story of an encounter between some rabbis and questions that will appear shortly. Mishabeach le Rava le Rav Nachman b'derav Acho bar Yankiv de Odom Gadol Hu. That means that Rava was praising to Rav Nachman. He was explaining, he was telling Rav Nachman about the greatness of Rav Acho bar Yankiv, that he is an Odom Gadol, he's a great man. Omar le Rav Nachman, upon hearing this praise, said, "Lichshiavo liotcha, when he comes to you, Haviyeu liodi, bring him to me. I want to meet this man that you claim is an Odom Gadol." Ki also legabe, when Rav Acho came to him, he came to Rava. Rava brought him to Rav Nachman. So when Rav Acho met with Rav Nachman, Omar le, Rav Nachman says, "Boy, minoi milsa, ask of me a question." What you find interesting here is, it would appear to me that Rav Nachman is testing out, is trying to evaluate the greatness of Rav Acho, and what is the method that Rav Nachman saw fit to do so? Not to put him to a test, present him a battery of questions, but rather to see what kind of question would Rav Acho ask. The depth of the question, the significance of the question would be revealing. So Rav Nachman says, "Ask of me something." Now, as far as the continuation of the Gemara, you notice there are bow tie shapes. On the side of the Gemara, there are no say mivne heading. The bow tie is featured, And we've noted in our margin, these are two she'elois, she'elo Ravacha bar Yankiv b'fnei Rav Nachman, two questions that Ravacha will present to Rav Nachman. Question number one, shor shel shnei shutfin, an ox belonging to two people. It's owned in partnership. And that ox kills someone. Ketzet mishalman kofer. How is the kofer payment to be made? That question will be posed to Rav Nachman, and the Gemara will point out that Rav Nachman starts to look into the matter, and before he arrives at some kind of response, Rav Acha presents a second question, number two, Haim memashkinim chayve koifer. The second question deals with someone who is obligated to pay kofer. Does the court take from him collateral in order to, we'll say, motivate or hasten him to make the payment? This idea of taking collateral we find in cases where someone donates their erech value, their Torah value, to the Beis HaMikdash. In contrast, people who are obligated to bring atonement sacrifices, they are not sought after for their collateral. In other words, we rely on them. They don't need additional motivation or incentive to pay to bring their sacrifice. How do we look at people that are obligated to pay kofar? And we'll see that. We'll see that, of course, in the Gemara text. Structurally, when you look at the way we've marked the Gemara, Rav Nachman had invited Rav Acha to ask him a question. And you notice we have a long marking, number one, followed by number two. And the two questions eventually are presented to Rav Nachman. And then we'll see Rav Nachman's response. It's not going to be a legal response, but you'll see Rav Nachman says to Rav Acha, listen, you know, you asked me the first question. I didn't give you an answer for that yet. And why are you raising a second question? Leave me alone to answer the first question before we get into any additional questions. Now the Gemara. Bo mine, Rav Acha asked Rav Nachman, Shor shel shnei shutfin, ketzer mishalman kofer. The ox that killed a person that happens to be owned by two people, how is the kofer payment made? Rashi elaborates here. Let's look at the Rashi together, a little more than halfway down the Rashi column. Ketzin Mishalman Koifer, the Bishlam on the Zikin, when it comes to damage payment, an ox owned by partners, and that ox causes damage. The payment method there is straightforward. Hai Palga Mishalim, Bai Palga Mishalim. Each partner will pay half the value of the damage. The Torah's concern is that a person receives restitution for damages. And in a case where each offender pays half, the victim of the damage receives his full payment. Kofer payment, though, is an atonement for the aggressor. The Trevayu Kaporabo, these two, their partners, they each one has a holding in a murderous animal. They own the murderous animal jointly, but they both need atonement. Ubachatsi Kofer lo michbar, and paying half your kofer obligation, you're not going to get the atonement that's required. Hence the question. So we go back to our Gemara text. How is the kofer payment made in the event that the murderous animal is owned by partners? The Gemara presents, Mishalem hai chatzi kofer v'hai chatzi v'hai kofer. Let me read that again. Mishalem hai kofer v'hai kofer. Would you say that each one pays a full kofer payment? But that wouldn't be reasonable, because kofer echad rachmon avalo shnei kofrim. The Torah speaks about one kofer payment. One payment made for one person who was killed, Not two kofar payments made for one person who was killed. What else could be? Hi, chatzi kofar, v'hai chatzi kofar. Should each partner pay only half the value? Half the kofar amount? That's also not reasonable. Kofar sholem omrachmona v'lo chatzi kofar. And as Rashi said before, the individuals here need their atonement. Atonement is by paying a full amount, not paying by paying half an amount. So the second suggestion also doesn't seem reasonable. That's Rav Acha's question. Adi Yosef v'kamayin bo, while Rav Nachman was sitting and looking into it, Omar Lei, Rav Acha chimes in with a second question. Tanan, we have a Tanaic source that speaks about different payments. Chai ve'erechin memashkin oson. Someone who took upon himself, who pledged to the Beis HaMikdash an erech payment. An erech payment is a Torah value of an individual based on gender and age. Without getting into any details, suffice it to say that erech, or erechin in the plural, is a pledge that someone makes to the Beis HaMikdash. And the source that we just read mentions that in order to give them an incentive to pay up, in order to, let's say, motivate them to pay up sooner rather than later, the Gizbar, the treasurer of the Beis HaMikdash, will come and take a mashkon, something of value, a collateral from the people that pledged the erech. You'll ask, why do they need to be motivated to pay up? Because this is not a payment that affords them atonement, expiation from sin. It's rather something that they pledged out of the goodness of their heart. And human nature is such that sometimes people don't pay up with great alacrity. Therefore, the need for taking a mashkon. People that are obligated to bring a sin or guilt offering to the Beis HaMikdash, no need for us to add additional incentive for them to bring their sacrifices. People are sufficiently motivated to achieve atonement that these sacrifices will grant them, will afford them. So we presented two categories of payment which have different halachas regarding our taking a mashkon from them. Chayvei kofrin, my, what about a person that has a kofar payment to be made? Two sides of analysis, and we call them aleph and then o dilma. You can see a line later, squiggle under o dilma, followed by beis, the second way of analyzing. Kevon de kapora hu kechatos v'yoshem domi, since the payment affords them with atonement, it can be viewed like the rule concerning the chatos and oshem, the sin offering and the guilt offering. Michma chomir liya v'lo boi mashkunei. Michma chomir means from the word chumra, chomir, chomur, means it's severe, sufficiently significant to the party himself, and you don't need to take a mashkon from them. Oy dilma, or maybe kevon de lechavrehu de boy meis v'lei. On the other hand, since it's a payment that's made to his friend, to his fellow man, it's not a kapora that's Beis HaMikdash related. It's money that's given to a fellow man. Mamona hu v'lo legavohu. It's a financial payment. It's not something that's sacrificial in nature. It's not sufficiently important, significant to him, and therefore we do need to take a mashkon. Inami, another reason to suggest we should take a mashkon. Kevon dehu lo chato mamonehu da'azik. Since the party himself didn't sin per se, it's not like the case of the chatas or osham sacrifices where the party himself sinned. Here, it's umamonehu de'azik, it's his property, his animal. that caused the damage that killed the person. Lo chomer milsilui, it's not sufficiently important to the owner himself. Uboi mashkone, and therefore there is need for taking a mashkon. That's the question. Do we take a mashkon from someone who's chayev a kofar payment? Rav Omar, Rav Nachman said back to Rav Acha, Shafkon, leave me be. Istagir b'kamaisa. Rashi, istagir b'kamaisa, husgarti v'ne'elamti borishona. I've I'm locked up and silenced by your first question. So, enough is enough, so to speak. You asked me one great question, and arrive at an answer for that before I turn my attention to your second question. Personally, I think there's an educational message in this whole in this give and take. Food for thought without any need for further elaboration. Tanu Rabbanan. We have a Tanaic source involving someone who borrows someone else's animal. Shalo b'cheskas tam v'nim samuot. A person borrows an animal thinking that it's tam, that it's a docile animal, and it turns out to be a muad, an animal that's demonstrated its propensity toward damaging, toward goring. And in the while in the possession of the one that borrowed it, it goes ahead and damages. The payment is made as follows. Bailim mishalim chatzi nezek v'shoyo mishalim chatzi nezek. The original owner, the one who loaned the animal, he will pay half damages, and the shoyo, the one that borrowed, pays half damages. You see, the one that borrowed the animal accepted it as a tam, so he has a half level damage obligation upon him. The owner, since he didn't reveal the true nature of the animal, they have to pay the other half. Huad beveis shayel v'chzir l'baylim, an animal that was borrowed, and while in the possession of the borrower, it gored three times. Then the animal was returned to the owner. In the event that there's a subsequent goring or damage that this animal inflicts, by the mishalim chatzi nezek, the owner pays only half damage. V'shoyel poter miklum, the one who borrowed the animal, he is totally exempt. The fourth damage was not done under his watch. He has since returned the animal. Rashi, Dibur Hamasa v'chziru l'baylim, the Rashi that we're looking at is approximately 9 lines up from the bottom. V'chziru l'baylim v'achar kachizik. After it was returned and having gored three times, it then damaged a fourth time in the domain of the owner. Bailim mishalmen chatzi nezek. The owner pays half damages. L'kamen meforesh taima. Later, the Gemara will explain the reason for that. The kosova rishus mishane. The source is of the opinion that the change in domain of the animal from shoel back to original owner changes the status of the animal as well, so that where it was it had been deemed a goring animal in the possession of the borrower, upon its return to the owner, they will say its slate is wiped clean and we start all over again, so that the next goring, which is the fourth in number but the first in the possession of the owner, the repossession of the owner, he pays only chatzi nezek as a tam would pay. In Rashi adds, uparchinon reisha l'seifa. In the Gemara itself, a question will be raised between the Reisha, which seemed to indicate that Rishus is not Mishaneh. In the Reisha, we saw an animal borrowed. It's true that in the domain of the owner, it was a Muad. Why do we not say that upon its being borrowed, Rishus Mishaneh, and the damage that results after the borrowing, during the borrowing period, he'll pay only half, and yet the source indicated not so. Now the Gemara. The Gemara continues. Omar Mor, a quote from that which we just read. Shalo b'cheskas tam v'nim tzamuad. A person borrowed an animal thinking that it was a tam, and then it turned out in actuality to be a muad. Ba'ilim mishalman chatzi nezek v'shoyol chatzi nezek. And now the Gemara goes on with a series of claims. You'll notice that we have a double underline marking, and we have also a house marking. The double underline, as you can see, we've indicated on the side of our Gemara, are Tainus Shahashayol Toyein Lebailim Loma Ein Olov Lishtatev Petashim Anezek. Claims that the Shoyal makes why he should not have to participate in the payments. The house marking that we'll see shortly are ukimtois, are setups, kidei lahasbir ha-mokur shelefiv ha-shoyal mishalim chatzi mehanezek, in an attempt to explain, according to the source, why is it that the shoel, the borrower, pays half damage? Bizman shishol b'cheskes tam v'nim samuad. When he borrowed it thinking that it was tam, and it turns out to be muad. So as we go on in the Gemara, we see the claims that the shoel makes in an attempt to achieve exemption. The Gemara. Why is it that the shoel has to pay half damages? Let the shoel say, let the borrower say, Tura she'ili, arye lo she'ili. I borrowed an ox, not a lion. Rashi adds very importantly here that if it was a tam, it wouldn't have gored. Omar Rav. Rav answers, Hocho b'may askinon. The source that we are featuring here is speaking in the following. Shehikir boy shehu nagchon. The one that borrowed it knew that the animal has gored. He didn't know that it gored three times. Rashi, shehikir boy shehu nagchon. Avolo yoda shenogach gimel. The borrower didn't know that it had gored already three times. Hilkoch, the tirusa de tam nagoch kabil alei, vave lei linturi. This borrower knew that it gored, but didn't know it gored three times. He thereby had accepted upon himself tam level responsibility. And it damaged. So he has to pay half damages as a tam. As he would have had to pay for a regular tam. The Gemara questions, though, in other words, from the borrower's standpoint, the name olay, let him say tam she'ili muad lo she'ili. I borrowed a tam. I didn't borrow a muad. With that, he is, as we said before, he's trying to escape the need to pay. So the Gemara says that's not going to work though for him. Mishum diomale, the owner says, soif soif, e tam have. At the end of the story though, if it was a tam, just like you're claiming, palga nisko boy is shlumi, you would have had to pay half damages. Hashtanami zil shlim palga nisko right now, so pay half damages. Our expectation of you to pay half damages is not eliminated by your claim that you thought you were borrowing a tam and it turned out to be a muad. Even according to your claim that you thought you were borrowing a tam, you would have had to pay half damages. The name ole, let the shoel say back, itam have mishtale migufo. If it was a tam, so then payment would have been made from the animal itself. I only borrow the animal. It's not my animal. I don't have to experience any out-of-pocket cost. But in the Tanaic source, the shoal has to pay half damages out-of-pocket. Does the shoal, though, not have this very solid claim that had it been a tam, so the payment would have been made from the animal itself, and I wouldn't have had to pay anything? Mishum, the omar le, the owner says back to the borrower, soif soif, at the end of the day, at lav tura bois shlumi ledidi, wouldn't you have to restore to me an ox? Look, you borrowed an ox. If the ox damaged, even according to what you're saying, payment would have been made to the victim through the ox, I still have a right to claim from you the return of an ox. So you would have still had to pay out of pocket. The namor lay, let the shoel say back. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. Im tam have, if we were dealing with a tam, modina umifterina, I wouldn't have had to pay anything because I would have simply confessed that the animal gored. I would have confessed to the victim that this animal gored. And when you confess, a knas type payment, a knas is a payment that one is required to make that doesn't reflect the actual value of the damage. And half payment doesn't reflect the value of the damage. Chatzi nezek, in this question at least, is viewed as a form of payment called knas. And we know that if a person who is obligated to make a knas payment confesses before witnesses bring him into court, he gains exemption. So couldn't the shoel have used this as a response? And furthermore, even according to another school of thought that says that half payment for damages is a financial payment, it's not the kind of payment that confession would result in exemption. Still, let the shoel say, itamhu, had the animal been a tam, have marikno lelagmo, I would have enabled it to escape into the fields, into the marshes. Since the payment for tam damages is migufo, is from the body of the animal itself, from the very animal itself, I would have created a situation where that payment wouldn't have been made. So why is the shoel obligated to pay chatzi nezek? If you have questions about this last claim of the shoel, how would this really have caused any exemption, we recommend looking at the second Tosfos on the page, who elaborates on what this shoel, what the borrower was really trying to accomplish with this claim. But suffice it to say that with this claim, he would have been able to save himself a pretty penny. Ella, so we have to reevaluate what are we talking about in this source that says that the shoel has to pay half. Does he not have a reasonable claim? Ela ocho b'may askinon kigon de'aktim beidino v'tafse. We're talking about a case where the Beis Din, where the court moved in with speed and grabbed the animal before the shoel had a chance to carry out his scheme as he just claimed. So since he doesn't have this avenue of escape, he has to pay the half damages. Question, Ihochi, if that is what the case, this source is talking about, where the court took over the animal. Now, things get flipped around. Bailim amai mashalmim chatzi nezek. The owner that the source said has to pay half damages, well, why? Neimale, let the owner say to the shayel, at besise leturoi, you enabled my animal to be grabbed by the court, biyoda, in the hands of mandalo motzina l'shtiei dina bade, someone that I have no chance against. In other words, if by enabling the court to take hold of the animal, so then I don't have any chance to avoid making payment. Before we go further, we have a note on the side, the nosei, we call hemshech, a continuation, with a mivneh, a structural note. Lefi ukimto hashniya, according to the second setup. The triangle with the point facing up indicates habaylim yechaylim lito neged hashoyel. The owner would seemingly have a claim against the borrower. The inverted triangle, tshuvos hashoyel habaylim, the responses of the shoyel of the borrower to the owner. So as we go, if you just scan ahead the next several lines, you'll see how there's a give and take with the triangles assuming an opposite direction each time. So in the meantime, does the owner not have a claim against the borrower? How is it that you enabled the court to take my animal? Mishum, we continue in our Gemara, mishum di omale, notice the inverted triangle, because the shoyel can say back, I ahadrusei nihaloch, had I returned the animal directly to you, lav minochavu shaklile, would they not have taken the animal from you? So that you would have lost your animal anyway to the court. The name ole, let the owner say, I ahadrise nihale, had I returned it to the court, had you returned it to me, have marikno le lagmo, I would have enabled the animal to escape out into the fields where the court wouldn't have been able to get it. So the owner still seems to have a claim that you should have returned it to me and not enabled the court to take possession of it. Answer to the Gemara says back, Mishum Domar Le, the reason the owner doesn't have a claim against the shoyel is because the shoyel, the borrower, says self. At the end of the day, though, Lav Me Aliyo, Hava Mishtalmi, would you not have had to pay anyway from your general assets? The fact that the court took it and that I didn't return it to you, with and your claim having, had it been returned to me, the owner, I would have been able to avoid payment, that's not so. Since we're dealing with a mu'od, payment is not made from the animal itself, it's made from his assets. The Gemara says, Honicha, that is true, that the shoel can defend himself, Hecho de is le nichsi. That's when the owner has property, has the means of paying from assets. Hecho de les le nichsi mai iko le meimar. In the event that the owner is impoverished and he doesn't have any additional assets from which payment can be extracted, what then can the shoel say? Is it not so that the owner still has his claim that you enabled the court to get it? What you should have said, you should have returned the animal to me. Mishum diomale, even in the event that the owner has no assets, still the shoyel did not cause the owner any loss by enabling the court to take possession, because the borrower can say ki hecha de mishtabdina lididoch. Just like I was bound to you, I was duty bound to you, Hachi nami mishtabdino leheich. I'm also bound to the victim of the damage, Miderebi Noson. Just to review the point, assuming that the owner has no other means of paying, it was the animal that would be the means of compensation to the victim, the shoel, by the shoel, in not returning the animal to the owner, but rather enabling the court to take possession of the animal, which will, in this event, be used to compensate the victim, the shoel is in perfectly solid legal footing, having allowed the court to take possession of the animal. By his statement that, just like I was bound to you, I'm also bound to the victim, Mida Rabbi Noson, based on Rabbi Noson's rule. Desanyo Rabbi Noson Oimer, Minayin Lenoishe Bechavero Mona, Bechavero Bechavero. From where do we know that if A owes money to B, and B owes money to C, Minayin Shemoitzien Mizeh Venoisen Lezeh, from where do we know that we have the right to take from A in order to pay C? And in our case, the shoyel, the borrower, had to return the animal, was expected to return the animal to the owner. The owner has to participate in the damages that the animal caused, so the owner owes money to a victim. So by Rabbi Nosson's rule, the shoyel, the borrower, ends up having to pay the victim with this animal. From where do we know this? From where do we know that we take the money from A and pay C? Talmud Lomar v'nosan la'asher or shein lo. From that posuk, without getting into how the words actually teach us this point, suffice it to say that this posuk is a source for Rabbi Nosson's rule. What we've accomplished then in the last section of Gemara is achieving an understanding of what are the circumstances of the source in which it was taught that the owner pays half and the shoyel pays half. The most recent, the second setup, as a result of questions raised on the first setup, the second setup was that the shoyel, we're talking about a case where the shoyel enabled the court to take possession of the aggressor animal. We continue now with an analysis of the source that we are learning. Notice this is a quote from Omid Aleph. We have an arrow enabling you to see where on Omid Aleph this was. This is the end of that source. And it said, Hu'ad bevei shoyo v'chziru l'baylem. An animal became a mu'ad. It gored three times while in the possession of the borrower. And then the animal was returned to the owner and an additional goring took place. Baylem mishalem chatzi nezei v'shoyo poter miklum. The owner pays half damages as if it were a tam, and the borrower is exempt. Seifa, according to this section of that source that we just read, the Seifa indicates Rishus Mishane. The change of domain makes a difference, changes the status of the animal. It had become a muad in the possession of the borrower. Upon its return to the owner, it reverts to tam status. That's Rishus Mishane. That's what the Seifa indicates. Reisha, Rishus Eino Mishane. The Reisha, though, where it was in the possession of the owner, it had been a mu'ad in his possession. When it reached the borrower, full payment nevertheless had to be made. This is a problem. You have one Tanaic source having an internal, we'll say, contradiction. What are we to make of it? As the Gemara goes on, diamonds appear, and you can see we've indicated under our Mivneherin that these are three gishos, three approaches, liyashev mashenira kistiro bein oreshev asefo shel abraisa bomer aleph. What appears to be a contradiction between the beginning and end of the braisa that started that we saw in Omer Aleph. Do we say that change of domain affects the status of the animal? So as we go on in the Gemara, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Tavra, Tamar means literally break it apart, split the source. Mi shishanazu lo shanazu. He who taught the Resha is not the same one who taught the Seifa. In other words, this source really has two authors in it. One, the Resha being of the opinion that Rishus ain't a Mishana, and the Seifa holding Rishus Mishana. A second approach, Rabba Omar. Midoresha Rishus ain't a Mishana. Rabba takes his cue from the Resha. The Resha sets the tone for Rabba, and in the Resha, Rishus ain't a Mishana. Seifa nami Rishus eino mishana. In the Seifa, the change of domain does not change the status of the animal. Well, if that's the case, why is the owner paying only half damages and not full damages? The Seifa hainu taimo, in the Seifa that we saw, upon the borrower returning the animal to the owner pays only half damages, mishum diomar lei. The owner has a strong claim. Lav kol kaminoch, it's not in your power, he says to the borrower, the miadis le lituroi, that you make my animal into a muad. You want a right to borrow the animal for your work purposes or whatever, but not for making my animal into a muad. Rav Papa, following in Rabba's footsteps, that the source is not authored by two opposing authorities, but rather it's one authority throughout the source. However, Rav Papa takes his cue from the Seifa. The Seifa sets the tone. Rav Papa, the Seifa Rishus Mishana, from the fact that upon reading the Seifa, it appears, as we said earlier, that Rishus Mishana, the return to the owner, enabled the animal's status to return to Tom's status. That's Rishus Mishana. Reishanami, Rishus Mishana. Reisha also would hold Rishus Mishana. The Reisha Hainu Taimo, and the Reisha that even though Rishus Mishana, still Nezek Sholem is paid as a result of damage while under the watch of the Shoel, Mishum, the Chol Mokom Shahoylech, wherever the animal goes, namely, whether it's in the possession of the original owner, where it already had become a muad, or it's borrowed by someone else, Shem Baila Valav, the name of the owner is still attached to the animal. So it's considered as if it's still in the basic domain or a possession of the owner, even though right now it's being borrowed. So that you don't have an example of Rishus Mishana when you're dealing with an animal that's borrowed. We continue with a quote from the Mishnah. Shor ho'itstadin, a shor that is trained to kill. It's trained to kill, in other words, it is a... similar to what you have in the case of bullfights, where the animal is incited, and it was a sport amongst the Romans to have animals put to the test, can they kill? That's called a shorhoit stadin. And in the event, and when it kills a person, we call that oinus. It's not something that the animal did on its own volition. It was incited to do it. And that's called, as we said, oinus. We saw in the Mishnah that such an animal, eino chayav mis, is not put to death. An animal that on its own kills a person is put to death. But that's where the animal itself initiated the killing, not where it was incited to do so. Concerning this, the Gemara raises a question. Concerning a shored stadin. On the side, we have an osay topic heading which reads, Shor Shahorag Boinus, which is shored stadin. An animal that kills through ones. Mahu legabi hamizbeach. What is the rule regarding its use as a sacrifice? Can it be slaughtered as a sacrifice in the Beis Hamikdash? Haimu koshuk korban oiloi. Is it allowed to be brought on the sacrifice as such? Now the Gemara. Ibayaloho, Mahu Legabi Mizbeach. An animal that kills on its own volition, and we said it's sentenced to death, it's obvious that that's not fit to be used as a sacrifice. It has to be stoned, put to death, not brought as a sacrifice. The question focuses on this kind of situation, this animal that we call Shoret Staden. Can it be used as a sacrifice? And as we said, look, the animal itself is not going to be put to death. It's not going to be stoned. So can it be used? Can we go further, so to speak, and use it as a sacrifice? Rav Omar Kosher. Rav says, yeah, it's okay. Ushmul or Pusul? Ushmul says, no, it's not allowed. It's disqualified from serving as a sacrifice. Rav Omar Kosher. Onusu. Rav says it's acceptable as a sacrifice. It's murder, it's killing of a person, that was onus. That's not something that it did on its own volition. Ushmuel Omar Pusul, it is unfit, it is disqualified. Neva bo avera. Through it, a sin was committed. In other words, through this animal, a person met his death. And that is a disqualifying factor as far as Shmuel is concerned. Meisvei. We raise a question. We'll see that it's a question on Shmuel. Take note of the long question marking. So we have a source that contains a lot of information. What we'll be interested in is in one part of the source. And if you skip the main frame section, what do you see in the Gemara after the main frame? Kotoni Mihas. It says, however, in this long source, it says, Reivea asa by Aines Keratzain, Naigeach loy asa by Aines Keratzain. Regarding the Nogeach, a distinction is made between Aines, where it kills under Ones circumstances, it was incited to do so, versus where it Ratzon, where it does so willingly. So in this source, all we really need to do is focus on those few words, and that's why we've dashed underlined them. Lamai Hilchasa, regarding what halacha, practically speaking, do we say that ones is different than ratzon? Lav le korban, is it not with regard to serving as a sacrifice? Namely, an animal that kills beratzon, we know, cannot serve as a sacrifice. And as opposed to that, the ones could serve as a sacrifice. It's not disqualified. That would be a kasha on Shmuel. That would represent a difficulty for Shmuel. The Gemara answers, though, with whatever it says, which Amir Tzashem will get to in good time. In the meantime, we go back to the first wide line of the Gemara. Meisvei, we raise the question on Shmuel. We have a posuk that opens this source. It's from Vayikra Perek Aleph, posuk Beis, right at the beginning of Sefer Vayikra. And on the side of the Gemara, we've quoted the pasuk, which will appear in fragments in this source. Now, on the side of the Gemara, we've written, Adam ki yakriv mikem korban lashem, min ha-behemo, min ha-bokor, u-min ha-tzon, takrivu es korbanchem. Pasuk describes a person that wants to bring a sacrifice to Hashem. And you notice the term min ha-behemo, from amongst the animals, from the cattle, from the sheep and goats. The term min is a limitation expression. And when we say min, habehema, from the animals means from amongst the animals, but not all. So now the source says, min habehema, lahoitzi es ha-reveya ves ha-nirba. What can be used as a sacrifice? Animals, but not an animal that practiced, that was participant in bestiality. That's Roveya and Nirba. Whether the animal as a male had intimacy with a woman, or Nirba, or some human being had intimacy with the animal. That is disqualified from serving as a sacrifice. Min habokor lahotzias ha-nevad, to the exclusion of an animal that was worshipped in idolatrous terms. Min hatzon lahoitzi, to the exclusion of es hamukze, an animal that was set aside to serve as a sacrifice to an idol. the Vav U Min Hatzon, which is present in the Pasuk, the Vav of that word, U Min Hatzon, the Vav Lahaitzias Anageach, to the exclusion of a goring animal. An animal that gored and killed someone is not kosher, not acceptable as a sacrifice. Omar Rabbi Shimon, Im Nemar Rovea Loma Nemar Nogeach. Once the Torah excludes Rovea, what was the need for the Torah to exclude Nogeach? Im Nemar Nogeach Loma Nemar Rovea. And if the Torah excludes a Nogeach, a murderous animal, why is there a need for the Torah to specify a separate exclusion of the Rovea? The Gemara answers, "Mipnei sheyesh b'roveya she'ein b'nogeach, v'yesh b'nogeach she'ein b'roveya." There are aspects that one has that the other doesn't have, and therefore, if I would have taught just one as being rendered unfit as a sacrifice, I would not, on my own through logic, have concluded that the other kind of offender is also disqualified. What are the differences? Roivea also by Oines Kerotzain. In the case of bestiality, the motivation, whether it was beyond its control or it was done willingly, makes no difference. Noigeach lo also by Oines Kerotzain. When it comes to goring, we don't view Oines as the same as we view Rotzon, willingness. So there you've got a difference. Noigeach mishalem koifer, roveaino mishalem as a koifer. For killing a person, a kofer payment is made. In the case of roivea, kofer payment is not made. So had I taught just nogeach, I wouldn't have known rovea. Had I taught just rovea, I wouldn't have known nogeach. Lefikach hutzrach loimar roivea, vahutzrach loimar nogeach. Therefore, the Torah had to go out of its way to exclude Rovea as well as excluding Nogeach. Kotoni Mias, it taught here in this source, Rovea also by Ines Kerotzain, Nogeach lo also by Ines Kerotzain. And as we saw earlier, we want to focus on Nogeach when it comes to an animal that murdered, that killed a person. Oines is not the same as Rotzon. Lemai hilchasa, with regard to what do we say that? Lav lekarbon, is it not with regard to acceptance as a sacrifice? And Rashi is quick to point out, and that's the context of the pasuk that we're citing here. It would seem that we make a distinction concerning the nogeach between oines and rotzon, that only barotzon it would be disqualified. Oines, it would not be disqualified. That would be a kasha on Shmuel. Lo. That is not the explanation of the source. Rather, lekatlo, regarding the execution of the animal. The source that said, Nageach lo yasa by Oines karatzon, a distinction is made regarding katlo. Do we stone the animal? There you'll find a difference. However, with regard to a sacrifice, no, you can't use either one. Even the oines will be disqualified, as Shmuel taught. Hachi nami mistabra. It's also likely that the exclusion of the oines has to do with it being excluded from execution. De I amris le korban. Had you said that the exclusion has to do with sacrifices, namely that an animal that killed Ba'inus is kosher for as a sacrifice, and animal that killed Barotson is disqualified, that's not likely the intention of the source. In the source, we saw the expression "Nogeach loy osa boy oines karotzon." The word "loy osa" is mashma, implies the pasuk So we read this brief quote, Nogeach, regarding the goring animal, the Pasuk did not make Eines Kiratzon. The Pasuk, the Torah verse, does not treat the Eines like the Ratzon. Yeah, but if the source is talking about sacrifices, Lav Eines Didei Ksiv, the Lav Ratzon Didei Ksiv, regarding disqualification from sacrifices, no distinction appears in the verse between Eines and Ratzon. So the Torah that let's say deals with making a distinction between Eines and Ratzon could not have been making that distinction regarding sacrifices. Elo lav lekatlo. Rather, the verse that makes a distinction between Eines and Ratzon was making a distinction with regard to the execution of the animal. As far as katla is concerned, it's clear from the psukim that there's a difference between an animal that kills because it was incited to versus an animal that kills beratzon, kills willingly. So at this point in the Gemara, when you look over the discussion that just followed, we had an issue raised concerning an animal that kills ba'ines. Is it suitable to be used as a sacrifice? Granted, the animal is not put to death. Is it suitable as being used for a sacrifice? We had a machlokas, Rav and Shmuel. The Gemara raised a question against Shmuel, and we then defended Shmuel, and we therefore are able to go on in the Gemara. Omar Mor. Noigeach mishalim es hakofer, roveah eino mishalim es hakofer. In the source that we read, the source featured distinctions between the noigeach and the roveah concerning the need to pay kofer. What are the circumstances, though, regarding the source? Before we continue in the Gemara on the side, you'll notice under our Nosei/Mivneh heading, a trapezoid or volcano shape appears, and we've indicated these are Shlavim, stages. Umachlokes Abaye v'Rova, Lahavin Hamokur Shikotoni Dereveah Eino Mishalei Mesakofer. We just said in our source, in our Tanaic source, that Roveah does not pay the kofer payment. What are the circumstances? Structurally, as you go, we'll go through stages. We're also going to have numbering. The bottom line, for example, we'll say Omar Abaye Lo'olam, and that's number one. And then when you get to the top line of Mem Aleph, Omen Aleph, Rava will appear as number two. And we indicated that we have a machlokes between Abaye and Rava in explaining the matter. Now the Gemara. Hechi domi, in lema de rova the katla. If the source is saying that bestiality took place and the animal killed the woman with which he was doing this, mali katla bekarna, mali katla berevia. What difference would it make between his having gored her and then having to pay kofar and having killed her this way because of this act of forbidden intimacy? You wouldn't be able to say in a case like that the roveah would not pay kofar. The owner of that animal would pay the family of that woman her value. Viela de rova velo katla. So rather, it must be speaking about a case where revia took place, where the bestiality took place, but she didn't die. She wasn't killed by the animal. The Gemara says, "Well, hi delo mishalim kofer mishum delo katlahu." The reason for not paying kofer is because she wasn't killed. So it's obvious then that there would be no kofer payment. What is the source talking about when it says that Nogeach will pay kofar, and Rovea, seemingly under similar circumstances, where there was a death, and it still would not pay kofar. Omar Abaye, Lo'olam Derava V'lo Kotla. The case of the source is, in fact, during the bestiality, the animal did not kill her. The woman who participated in this forbidden act did so willingly. She was brought to the court, and she was executed by the court. Mahu detema, without the source, one might have thought. We continue at the top of Daf Mem Aleph. Keman de katla domi. Well, that's as if the animal killed her. Komash Malon, the Brisa tells us, not so. The Brisa tells us that Rovea does not pay kofar. Rova Omar, Li'olam de Rova Vikatla. You see how Rova disagrees with Abaye and sets up the source of Revia with her being killed during that act. Uduka Kashiloch Mali Katla Bekarna, Mali Katla Berevia. And then you'll ask, why the distinction between the animal being killed through its goring her versus the woman being killed through the during the act of bestiality? Why in such a case would there be no kofar payment? Answer: Karen Kavonoso Lahazik. In the case of goring, the animal had murderous intention. Hi, during the act of revia, Kavanosu lahanos atzmohu. There is no murderous intention on the part of the animal. The animal is engaged in having some kind of pleasure. Bemai pligi. What is the underlying point of disagreement between Rava and Abaye? Or you can alternatively, in legal terms, where would this disagreement be manifest elsewhere? The Gemara answers: Beregel shedor salgabi tinaik bechotzer anizak. A case where an animal trampled upon an infant, a small person, in a private domain, and killed that child. Abaye mishalim kofar. According to Abaye, the only reason there was exemption is because during the act or during the time the animal was involved, no death took place. In this case, where the animal is involved, a death does take place. That's enough, as far as Abaye is concerned, for kofar to be paid. So that even without, as far as Abaye is concerned, even without any intent, any destructive intent on part of the animal, there still would be kofar in the case that the animal is directly responsible for the death of the person. L'rova lo mishalem kofar. In the case of regel shadosa gabi tinok, since there was no murderous intention on the part of the animal, therefore, there won't be any kofar payment. As Rava said before, in the case of Rava, where the animal is participant in bestiality, there was no, even though the woman died at that time, the animal's exempt. The owner is exempt from paying kofar because there was no murderous intent. In the case of Regel Shador Segabi Tinok, the animal is walking along its merry way in the private domain. There was no murderous intent. Therefore, there is no kofar payment. Tanya Kavose de Rav. This is a throwback to the discussion we saw on Mem Omid Beis. And here you can take advantage of the arrow that indicates to look back to Mem Omid Beis, in which Rav said that an animal that killed Ba'oinis, Shorhut Stadin, is kosher, is acceptable as a sacrifice. So here we have a Tanaic source supporting Rav. Tanya Kavose de Rav, Shorhut Stadin, Eino Chayav Misa, an animal that's incited to kill, and it kills a person, it itself, the animal, is not put to death. For kosher legabi mizbeach, and we've dashed underlined that because that's the reason this source is being quoted here. It's suitable, it's acceptable to be brought on the altar. The animal is like one that is forced into doing it. And as a result, the animal's not disqualified from serving as a sacrifice. Before we can conclude our shiur, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.